Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour. This is May 21st, 2004. Except in Australia and New Zealand, it's probably already May 22nd. Who cares? Anyway, if you want to tune in, we'd call in. We'd be glad to talk with you and answer your questions. My name is Kent Hovind, and I'm sitting here with our webmaster, Jonathan Sampson. And we are discussing topics related to creation, evolution, dinosaurs, and the Bible, and probably a variety of other things come up, too. Our position here is the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The evolution theory is one of the dumbest and most dangerous religions in the history of the world. Didn't happen. God created this world in 6 days, just like he said he did. He owns it. He makes the rules. We better obey him or we are in trouble. A lot of folks have been asking, what's going on with Hovind and the county and Hovind and the IRS and all that stuff? Well, I have other dragons to slay, okay? The evolution theory, to me, is absolutely critical, and that's what God's called me to do. But Richard has called and talked to me a bunch of times and has now got a website up explaining everything. So I'll let Richard fight the battle. I'm going to go on and talk about creation, evolution, and dinosaurs. If you want to go to richardsays.com, is it Jonathan, S-A-Y-S, right? richardsays.com. Yeah, check that out. If you don't have our newsletter, oh, John, did you put the new newsletter up on the website? You don't have it. It's in my folder, projects, 2000, you know, 5-05 or something like that. Get our new newsletter up. Just went out today. If you don't receive our newsletter by email and would like to get on the list for free, you can contact on the website. What do they do, Jonathan, to get the newsletter?
They can go to www.drdonner.com, and right on the front where it says newsletter, they just type in their email address and hit submit, and they will be automatically added to our database.
Sounds great. It's too late to get it for this time. It already went out, but it'll go out next time, right? But we can put it on our website as the newest newsletter. Okay, what we're going to do is make a few announcements, read some testimonies, and then get right to questions. If you want to call in, you can get your question on the air at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO. 3466. And we'll be glad to put your questions, answer your questions or talk with you about these subjects, creation, evolution, and dinosaurs. This is the testimony folder from yesterday. My secretary, Martha, who normally gives me the new testimonies, had to take her mother to the doctor, her aging mother today, and been gone most of the day. I don't know if there's any more, but we got a bunch in the folder. Oh, you got the whole stack there, huh? Man. We get a lot of people write in, mostly smiley face, but some frowny face. They don't like our ministry for some reason. And I don't know why, Jonathan. I've met a lot of people, and I think we're nice people around here. Maybe Richard can get these guys straightened out at richardsays.com. Get everybody, all the people that don't like us can read what Richard says, because he knows. He knows the truth. Okay, here we go. John David Milner, or announcements first. This September, 17, 18, 19, our Southeast Creation Conference. If you want to come, we'd be glad to have you. $50 for the whole conference. That includes an audio tape of all the sessions, even the ones you can't go to. You can go to drdino.com and click on Southeast Creation Conference. We'd be glad to have you come visit and see this amazing place down here in Pensacola, Florida. And also, let's see, if you live in driving distance of Pensacola and are listening to the program, the first Friday of every month, we have our first Friday fabulous family fun frolicking time or something like that. I don't know what they call it, but we open the park at night so people can come and stay till 9:30 every night, just that Friday. First Friday of the month. So that's coming up here in about 10 days or whatever it is. This is coming up in 2 weeks that you can come to that. Or come visit our Dinosaur Adventureland anytime. Southeast Creation Conference is September. That's going to be awesome. We have some really, really powerful speakers coming in that will just be exciting. Lots of good stuff to learn on creation and evolution. Here's one from John-David Milner. Hello from Canada. I just felt the need to tell you how much we are enjoying your creation seminar DVDs here in our small little town of Princeton, British Columbia. The Baptist Church is playing the seminars on Sundays from 3 to 5 and is getting a good turnout. So I just thought I'd share this with you in case you need a little positive feedback. Thanks for bringing glory to him, J.D. Milner. Stay well. Well, thank you, J.D. Well, yes, positive feedback is always good. We get plenty of negative feedback, that's for sure. From folks who don't take our position that the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate and the evolution theory is dumb. And it is, for some reason, they just don't agree. But that's okay. Keep listening. We'll fix that. And the seminar series everybody refers to, folks, is our, you can download it off the internet or you can order it on the website, drdino.com. We have it on DVD, VHS, PAL, for those in European countries. We can produce it in CCAM, PAL-M, PAL-N, you name it, we can do it right here. Well, as far as this, that goes on. Here we go. Richard Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L, writes here. Dr. Hovind, I recently bought, I believe, the CSE seminar series, and it's amazing. It has answered so many questions that I have had and has really cleared up my misunderstanding. A friend of mine had a psychology class at college, and she showed me one of the seminars. The whole class went into uproar and gave her a very hard time. Oh, she showed one of the seminars in the psychology class. Okay. The class went into an uproar and gave her a very hard time indeed. They would not even accept someone else's view, let alone very clear-cut and obvious evidence against this evolution rubbish. Tried to show my tapes, Jonathan, and the class went into an uproar, it says here. It sounds like the book of Acts. They tried to preach the gospel in the whole city. Started screaming and yelling and, you know, drag them off. And they did them. They actually started biting with their teeth. They don't want to hear it. They stopped their ears, dragged them off, and bit them. That's open-minded. Tolerance. They preach tolerance. Yeah. Yeah, we're tolerant of everybody except those who are right. Yeah. What was it Frank Peretti said in his sermon on the chair? Did you see that? The chart or the chair? Have you seen it?
I saw about 5 minutes of he preached at Stilling the Minds. You've been there several times,
right,
to my
right.
knowledge. And he preached there and also gave the chair lecture or presentation. I saw about 5 to 10 minutes of it. What I saw was absolutely brilliant.
He's brilliant.
So
I enjoyed old Frank Peretti. He said the atheists were talking about, some atheists were talking about how you should be, they walked up here and said, you shouldn't impose your views on others. That's wrong. He said, hello, what are you doing to me right this moment? Imposing your view on me. Brilliant logic he puts out. Okay. But anyway, so your psychology class says my material was, they apparently laughed him down or something like that. Richard Farrell. It's a different Richard. Richard Says has the website, richardsays.com, which is finally defending, probably a lot of topics, but certainly the Hovind view on IRS and, the county battle over the building permits. Richard says, I feel very worried for others in school right now. I'm 23, and the situation with evolution in schools is frightening. I'm also worried about my father, who I managed to get to watch one of the seminars for about 10 minutes. He turned it off and said that if I believed the world was only 6,000 years old, I was silly. He said he would like to see you try to win a debate with an evolution scientist, so I guess that's what I'm saving up for. Well, Richard, have we got a deal for you? All 8 of our new debates are now available. I've had 90 debates at universities. 20 of them are available on videotape or DVD. Go to our website. Is that up there, Jonathan? They can order the 8 new ones? That should be changed on the website because they're now available. They're done.
I don't have any information.
Okay. Make a note to do that. DVD, VHS, available, number 13 through 20, available now. And you can get that news, you get the information right out of the newsletter. That newsletter you're going to get off my desktop here in a minute. So put that up there and the new newsletter. Okay, so he turned it off and said he wants to try to see me win a debate with an evolutionist. Okay, well, Richard, tell your dad I've won 90 debates with evolutionists, and I would be glad to debate any number of evolutionists at a time. I had one, a month and a half ago, 3-1 at Embry-Riddle University. 3 professors who teach at the famous Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. Nice guys, but I beat them real bad because I'm right and they're wrong. Real simple. Okay, Richard says, I work for a Christian outdoor center in Scotland run by the Abernathy Trust Charity, where we have many children each week who we take out on activities and tell them the gospel. Your seminar series has given me and my workmates a great ability to answer questions. Once again, many thanks for the knowledge you've passed on. When I've saved up, I look forward to getting your debates. God bless you, Richard. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate that. That's awesome. And let me know how things go in Scotland. And if you get a chance, send me the Loch Ness Monster for my museum. I would love to have Nessie down here swimming around in our pond. Okay, Mike writes in, Dear Dr. Dino, first I wanted to start off by thanking you for being an affirmation to my faith. I can never say thank you enough, but I know God will bless you in a special way. I'm writing this testimony because I have a cousin that once asked me if he could borrow one of my Dr. Dino's DVDs. He cited it and emailed his college professor with a letter informing the professor of his false teachings, but in a respectful way. Surprisingly, the next day in class, the professor had a slideshow that he wanted to show the class. And to my cousin Alex's surprise, the professor admitted in front of the class, with the slideshow, that he has taught false science. The teacher did not say the student's name. Oh, praise God. Can you believe that? The professor got up and admitted they've been teaching lies. You need to watch my video number 4, folks, Lies in the Textbook. It is amazing, all the stuff that's being taught in textbooks that has been proven wrong, sometimes over 100 years ago, they still teach it because that's their evidence for evolution. This is not science. This is propaganda, big time. Okay, if you want to AOL instant message us, get to Dr. Dino Live, and they don't have to put a .com or nothing. I've never AOL instant message anybody. What do they do, Jonathan?
You know, all they go is, if they don't have the application, it's just AOL Instant Messenger. It's a free program they can get from AOL.com. They download that, they'll have to make up their own screen name.
Anything will do. We can
Yeah, very unique ones on there. And then they can contact us by just sending an instant message to Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive, and we will get it immediately.
That's why they call it instant message.
Instant message.
Wow. Okay. JMK1611 sends us our first one today, instant message. Psalm 115, verse 16 says, "The heavens, even the earth, are the Lord's, but the earth hath he given to the children of men." With this verse in mind, do you think man's space travel is wise outside a magnetosphere where there is no protection from heavy ions and other galactic cosmic radiation? JMK, I don't think travel outside the Earth is wise financially. The purpose of NASA these days seems to be to prove the evolution theory. They're spending billions and billions of dollars for what?
Yeah, we're actually, Heath and I, we're watching a DVD called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon the other
night.
I don't know if, you know, they're true or if they're right in saying that we did not go to the moon the first time or not, but they do have some very interesting figures in there financially wise saying what they spend on the space station, on, you know, rockets and so forth, you know, space shuttles, and how if they would just channel that towards something else, they could feed, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people for their entire life.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, the funding that goes towards one space shuttle.
Yeah. Well, I was in the museum in outside of Shirley, Illinois, outside of Bloomington. And I mentioned this in my newsletter that just went out, which they can get on the website as soon as Jonathan gets it up there. They have 2 moon rocks, you know. In this, very few people have moon rocks, okay. There aren't many places on planet Earth that have actual moon rocks. But they've got 2 at this Funk, F-U-N-K, Mineral and Gem Museum. And Shirley, Illinois. Great place. Really enjoyed it. Fabulous, fabulous rock display there. Anyway, the cost of those rocks is incredible. If they spend all these bazillions of dollars to go to the moon, I can tell them what they're going to find. They're going to find more rocks. You call NASA, tell them, I will sell them rocks for 1/10 of the price.
Is there anything that could actually be beneficial about going to the moon? Anything whatsoever.
A lot of things about the space program are good. That's how we developed silicone and miniaturized computers. And, you know, we have a lot to thank. But could this have been done by the private sector cheaper? You know, probably no question, you know. The driving purpose behind NASA these days is not necessarily space exploration, but proving the evolution.
Yeah.
That I resent. Anyway, okay, so JMK, I don't think it's financially wise to go to try to manned space travel. I'm not against it because it's, you know,
it's cool.
Satanic or anything. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's just too expensive.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, it'd be cool to have a gold-plated car, too.
It's like, you know, it'd be cool to fly to the Bahamas or something or to Hawaii. Sure. It's just too expensive.
If you can afford it. Now, if they're spending their own money, I wouldn't mind, but they want to spend our money.
Billions of dollars of our money.
Yeah. Here we go, from Drew. Drew Music 3 writes, "Jonathan, thanks. I have talked to you before. The question I have is why he uses old books, some being over 10 years old, to prove lies being in the textbooks." Break time. Well, see, I have in front of me books from 1890 to 2004. I use them all, so a lot of them are 10 years old. I need to update some of my slides. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back after the break. Thank you. All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. If you want to call in, dial 850 479-3466. Jonathan, what's this AP Biology book you got there? What are they teaching in there?
Well, this right here, this isn't the, this is AP Biology. This is Homework Helpers. So they're supposed to be helping students learn, the finer things in life. It's the Biology from Matthew DiStefano. And here on page 155, this is 2004 edition, brand new book, just got it from Barnes & Noble's. It says, Evidence for Evolution, Scientific Evidence for Evolution. One of them, go figures, evidence from embryology. It says, in organisms such as chickens, pigs, and humans, developing embryos all have gill slits.
That's only been proven wrong since 1875.
It takes some time for them to get up to date, though. The next one is evidence from vestiges. A vestige is a structure found in an organism that does not have any one use. One very well-known example of a vestige structure is the human appendix. Not true either.
The appendix is part of your immune system. It's true you can live without it, like you'd live without all your fingers or your whole arm, It doesn't prove you don't need it. What a dumb... Who's the author of that one?
That is Matthew DiStefano, Homework Helpers. There's also three of them that I mentioned to you once before. Cliff's Advanced Placement Biology for SAT, Kaplan Advanced Placement Biology for SAT, and SparkNotes Advanced Placement Biology for SAT. All 2004 editions for Advanced Placement Biology teaching gill slits.
Wow. All right.
Goofy.
Drew Music wrote in and said, wondered why I had quotes from textbooks 10 years old. Part of the problem, Drew, was when I taught school 15 years ago, I had all the science textbooks. And then I, of course, am not teaching school anymore. I'm traveling, speaking full-time, so it's a little harder for me to get the most current books. I do have many, many textbooks in the last 15 years, but I used to, basically get them all. And now it's a little harder for me to get them. But I have four 2004 biology books, I think, maybe five, on my shelf. I have to get up there and look, but leave my microphone. Okay, anyway, we try to update quotes as we can. It's rather busy around here.
Anybody can go to, I was just saying, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, go to the evolution section, the science section, open up any evolution book, go straight to the evidence for evolution, and they will find gill slits, homology, everything that you destroy in your seminar, everything that you just dismantle, they'll find it in these books.
You're still teaching it. They need to watch video four. They're lying. Either that author is lying, or he's way behind on his scientific research. Either way, he shouldn't be writing a biology book.
Yeah, I think he cares more about his paycheck than he does the education that he's trying to put on his kids.
Deliberately lie. Here we go. James Coloma writes in. I hate liars and people who lie. I'm almost tempted to talk about the lie yesterday that was told to my secretary Martha when she... I better not. I will refrain. Not because I'm afraid, because I got other dragons to slay. Here we go. James Coloma writes in, family question. If Noah opened the ark in 601 on the first day of the month, is that January 1st? On Genesis 8:13, Adam lived 930 years. Does that show Adam lived in the garden 330 plus years before the fall? I don't get the connection there, James. I don't think there's any way to tell how long Adam was in the garden. I suspect 100 years. I mean, only because he was 130 when Seth was born. Before that, had Cain and Abel, but no dates are given. They could have been in the garden 100 years, got kicked out, had Cain and Abel. They got big enough for one to kill the other, and then they had Seth. So I don't know of any good way to tell, but I could say somewhere between day 7 and 130 years later, Satan fell, and then Adam and Eve fell. I cover this on videotape number 2, James, if that helps. Let's see. He goes on and says, if Adam was born in year 1, actually Adam wasn't born, he was created, but that's okay, and Seth in 130, in what year were Enos, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah born? Well, those, you'd have to just look at the chart, James, which you can... We got to put that chart up too, Jonathan. I know you got plenty to do, but add that to your list.
It's on there.
It's on there. Okay, yeah. The timeline.
They can go to drdonna.com, click on science, I believe, and I go to articles, and it'll be timelines.
Articles, timelines. Look at that. You're on the ball. Of course, you quit what time? 3 o'clock last night? Something like 2:30? Okay, yeah. That's how you get it all done. So as far as with the dates of their birth, that is all given on the timeline now on the website, drdonna.com. Okay. How were family reunions held back then? I mean, was Adam alive when all these men were born? Were all of them alive when the deluge came over the earth? How many days have the Jewish calendar? Are all the Bible dates based on the Jewish calendar? Okay, James, this is covered pretty thoroughly on videotape number one of my seminar, or on the chart, which is taken from the dates given straight from the Bible. Jonathan, is it a PDF where they can zoom in on it and look at it, read all the text? Okay. So it's a PDF. You can zoom in. And there's a lot of interesting reading in the points to ponder section on that chart. We have those charts. If you can order them laminated, beautiful color charts that are laminated, heavy lamination, 10 mil. You can use it for placemats when your skeptic friends come for lunch. I can assure you that will stir up a conversation. So the answer to your question, one of these questions, is yes, quite a few people were alive to meet Adam. He certainly could have known Noah's father Lamech and his grandfather Methuselah, could have known them for a long time. He could have known Lamech for 56 years. So we don't know that they ever met. I mean, it's a big world, but I would assume that they did. I think it'd be something everybody would do in their lifetime is take a pilgrimage to go meet Adam. That would be something I would certainly try to do if I lived back then. Or even Noah after the flood. If you lived back then, you'd want to go meet Noah or Shem, one of these guys who could tell about the pre-flood world. Okay, here's one. There's an interesting one, Jonathan, from Anonymous. How and why are men and women different? How and why are men and women different? Anonymous? How they are different, I think, ought to be fairly obvious, unless you're blind. And possibly, even then, it would be obvious, yeah. Why they're different? Well, first place, there are billions and billions of similarities, you know. Both have arms, legs, eyes, ears, etc. As far as differences, that is so we can make more young men and young women to grow up to make more and, preserve the kind, the humankind. I think I'll pass on that question, Jonathan. I taught biology and anatomy. If they don't know, probably can't help them. Here we go. Tiffany wrote in, what do you know of heliocentricity versus geocentricity in comparison regarding the Bible, thanks TR? Tiffany, I have mentioned this before on the broadcast. I have heard some of the arguments for geocentricity. Basically, the geocentrists are still teaching that everything revolves around the earth. They do not believe the sun is the center of the solar system. They believe the earth is. Helio means sun, so heliocentric theory says the sun is the center. This was an argument, 300 years ago, I guess, that I think was pretty well settled in favor of the heliocentric theory. Though, surprisingly, there are some, very smart men and some scientists who still believe in geocentricity. I am not one of those. I think there's pretty overwhelming evidence from the Foucault pendulum, from prevailing wind currents, from Coriolis effect, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of scientific proofs that are pretty hard to overcome for the heliocentric theory. However, with that said, I think the sun is the center of the solar system, but I think the earth is probably the center of the universe. I don't know that. I don't know how you could prove it. We don't know where the edge is, so you can't tell where the middle is. From our perspective, of course, it looks to be the same distance in all directions. That would be obviously what we would expect. So I think it's an argument. Others can fight that battle. I don't have time for that one. Okay, Christy Sandoval writes in. Hi, I'm Christy. I'm a junior at Santa Fe High School in New Mexico. Well, actually, I was writing because a couple of questions have come to my history class. You probably heard of the Kennewick Man, the first Americans. Well, I would just like to get a better idea how old he really is and find the truth about him. My teacher says he's 9,000 years old, like the anthropologists have come up with. So if you'd like some more specific questions, please let me know. Thanks a lot. I love your series on creation. Keep up the good work, Christy. Well, Christy, thank you. I think the Kennewick Man, if I recall, is covered in the book Bones of Contention by Marvin Lubinow. Bones of Contention is an excellent book about all of the so-called cavemen. As far as the dating, I wouldn't believe that for a second. It's not 9,000 years old. You might want to contact Joe Taylor at mountblanco.com, mtblanco.com. He has quite a few amazing fossils in his creation museum there in West Texas, Crosbyton, Texas. I was there a couple months ago with Joe, great man of God. He has quite a few interesting artifacts, and I think could give you an earful on the Kennewick Man and others. But Marvin Lubinow's book, Bones of Contention, is phenomenal. Best one I'm aware of. You might want to check that one out. Okay, JMK writes in again. I have read at dictionary.com that the thymus becomes vestigial after puberty. Jonathan, you have the book on vestigial structures. Does the thymus become vestigial after puberty?
I do have this book here. It's called Vestigial Organs, with quotes around it, are fully functional by two PhD medical doctors. They can get this from Creation Research Society. It has a chapter here, a full chapter on the thymus. I'm just going to read one paragraph here. It says, now labeled the master gland of the body's intricate immunity system, the thymus is known to play key roles in directing the development of a functioning adult immunological system. Mazur reported this changed view in the thymus as follows. And they go on to basically document many medical practitioners and researchers all throughout history who have admitted that the thymus is the master gland of the body's intricate immunity system. It's not vestigial.
It is not vestigial.
You know. Yeah.
You know, I think part of the problem with this vestigial argument, they're looking at the human body and saying, we don't know what this does, therefore we don't need it.
Which is bad science.
Really bad science. Put a 5-year-old under the hood of the car and say, take out anything this car doesn't need to run. The fact that he doesn't know what it does, it doesn't mean the car doesn't need it, okay? Mm-hmm. Truth is, you do need everything you got.
That's why it's better to be a creationist, because then when we look at something, even if it looks like it doesn't do something or we don't understand it, we continue to study it because we know it was created by God and it has a purpose.
Right.
It has a function.
They used to have a list of 180 vestigial organs you don't need anymore. That was just 100 years ago. They thought you didn't need your adenoids, your tonsils, your, you know, pituitary gland, your thymus gland, your thyroid gland. I mean, they just didn't know.
We could find an evolutionist today and see if they want to take it all out of themselves.
Sure.
See how well they do.
I tell you what, we should get some of these professors, and I would pay to have each of those formerly thought vestigial structures removed.
Mm-hmm.
Be expensive surgery, but it'd be worth it just for a test for one.
Yeah.
I can think of some who might want to volunteer for the job. I won't mention any names on the air. Okay. Sylvia writes in. I'm sorry. There's more here on the AOS message. I got too many right in front of me here. JMK writes, was the star of Bethlehem a nova that showed up twice within 2 years? Is there any secular supporting evidence? JMK, I am unaware of any way to prove or disprove the Star of Bethlehem story. The Bible says it happened. How they could follow a star and get to that precise location within 2 miles. I mean, Bethlehem is just a couple miles from Jerusalem. When I was over there 2 years ago, you can sit in Jerusalem and see Bethlehem. It's maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 miles, 7 miles away, whatever it is. The star, all I can do is say it must have been some kind of miracle. I cannot imagine how you can get something way up in the sky and use it to determine exact distance. Unless they had like a pendulum they're hanging down, looking straight up a string to determine when they're exactly under that star. But with the Earth turning, I mean, that would change every minute. I wish I understood the Star of Bethlehem. I don't know anybody who's... I've heard some of the supposed answers, and they just don't ring true with me. Here we go, from Kent Hope and Rules. Now, there's a screen name.
So like we were saying earlier, people have some weird names.
Kent Hovind Rules what? Okay. Dr. Hovind, why do you claim that the moon is moving away from the Earth? It is, most all scientists say it's moving away linearly, when most scientists say it's moving away geometrically. To me, that doesn't seem to be good young Earth proof, when it could be only millimeters millions of years ago. I support your ministry, and Jonathan is a great guy. Andrew from California. You have another fan, Jonathan, too.
All right, Andrew. Thank you very much. I'll give you a hug someday.
Okay, I think you'll notice if you listen to my seminar, Andrew, I say I don't know that it's ever been proven if the moon moves away geometrically or linearly. It is logical that it would be geometrical. I don't think you could find anywhere where I've said it's moving away linear. What that means, if you project it back in time, it would be a straight line. The rate of recession. Has it always been 3 inches a year, or whatever the moon's moving away? Let's say it's 3 inches a year. Has it always been 3 inches a year, or was it some other number? A geometric progression would be something like, you'd put on your XY axis in your graph paper, Y equals X squared, or something like that. For those that have had geometry, that'll make sense. So, I think I've always said it's probably geometrical progression. But it may be the opposite of what you're thinking. It may have actually moved away faster in the past than rather than slower. You're assuming, I think, the opposite of what has been demonstrated with the moon. Okay, it says, I love your debate against Michael Shermer. I invited everyone in my anthropology class, and it was interesting. Most thought you were the winner and really called into the question the evolution taught in our class. Well, good. That is the purpose, Andrew, is to try to get them to think, you know. It's a college. You're supposed to be thinking.
Michael Shermer is a regular columnist for Scientific American and editor of Skeptic Magazine, Skeptic.com. And you debated him twice now, and so far you're 2 for 2.
I'd be glad to debate him again. I don't think he'll do it, but if he will, it's super. I'll fly out my expense just to debate him again.
And that particular debate that he's talking about, Ken Hovind Rules is talking about, is for sale now in the debate series.
That is debate number 20 of our series, and I thought it went very well. Michael Shermer is a very nice guy. He is very wrong in what he believes, and he's leading others astray, so I don't like what he's doing. He's still using lies to support his theory.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have evidence, show me, but quit lying to the kids. Okay. Sylvia Wood writes in, I watched a show on the Learning Channel or the Discovery Channel, and it gave three accounts of a pterodactyl attacking people. One of them was in Mexico, and the other were in Ohio, I believe. A man recorded a mated pair with an 8mm camera. The birds were quite a ways off, but you could definitely tell that they were at least 20 feet tall. The scientists said that his tape could not be believed because it was too far away and there was no sound to it. When he recorded it, there was sound, but when he got his tape back, it was just static. The guy in Mexico got carried off by it, and they never saw or heard from him again. The child that was picked up was in one of the states of the Mississippi Valley when he was 9 years old, and his cousin grabbed hold of his legs as the bird was trying to fly off with him. Well, let me stop right there and say, I went to the spot where this happened. It's in Illinois. There's a boy in Illinois, 9 years old, according to his mother and brother and the boy, a pterodactyl flew in, grabbed the kid, started trying to fly off with him. I think the mother and the brother grabbed the kid's legs and pulled him down. That's the story. It's a white trailer with black trim in the front yard is where this happened.
Now, does the kid have any scarring or anything on his shoulders?
He's a grown man now. This happened years and years ago. The story's found in many books on, you know, cryptozoology about pterodactyls still living. So when I was driving through, it's a little tiny town in Illinois, somewhere between where you're from, southern Illinois. Oh, break time. I don't know if I can find the story or not now. I got a million books in front of me. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back after the break. And Sylvia, hang in there. I'll finish your question in a moment. All right, folks. Welcome back to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour. If you want to call in, call 850-479-3466. 850-479-3466. We can take your call live or AOL Instant Message us. During the break, we were unable to find the name of the city where the kid was carried away or claimed he was carried away by the pterodactyl. I have interviewed probably three or four people who claim they have seen a live pterodactyl. Carl Ball from Glen Rose, Texas, is coming to speak at our Southeast Creation Conference.
He's actually got permission from, is it?
Papua New Guinea.
Papua New Guinea, to go down there and actually check out what they are recording as pterodactyls flying around.
There were several reports during World War II, because New Guinea was pretty involved in World War II, fighting against the Japanese, where American soldiers claimed they saw pterodactyls in Papua New Guinea. And there have been reports since then by missionaries who live there. Other missionaries who live there say, no, I've never seen one. Well, never seeing one doesn't prove they don't exist, okay? They can't find Osama bin Laden. He's 6'4". There are panthers in Florida. I've never seen one. I saw one dead on the highway.
There was a time when there were bobcats in near my hometown, Mount Carmel, Illinois, and that was the scariest thing in the world. You know, my hometown is probably 12 feet long, and they're saying there's bobcats in there.
Yeah.
No, it's like, I'm not going outside. I'm not even going to take a bath. Probably a shark in my bathtub.
That could be, yeah, that's right. Okay, so Sylvia said pterodactyls, somebody saw them 20 feet tall. That sounds a little far-fetched, but you never know. So the guy in Mexico got carried off, and the kid was picked up in the States in Mississippi Valley. That's correct. It was Illinois, if it's the same one I'm thinking of, the story that I read. I'll tell you what, Sylvia, if you go to the library and go to the section QL89, if it's a Library of Congress system, or Dewey would be 001.9, there you will find all the books on cryptozoology type stuff. Or come to Pensacola, Florida, and see our library here, and I can show you to our cryptozoology section, and I'm sure you can find the story in one of those books. Let's see. was picking up both boys off the ground, then his mother came out and held him until the bird let go. And he still has the talon marks on his shoulders, and he's now about 30. See? There's the story. I did go to the town. I have never met the boy, or the man now. I would like to sometime. Sorry, I don't know the details. It's been a year since I saw the show, when I was, show came on at 11 or 12 at night. Enjoyed your videos. Thanks, Sylvia Wood. Well, Sylvia, thank you so much. Yes, that story has been told a long time, and the kid still tells the story. To my knowledge, in the 20 years since it's happened, he's never changed his story. He claims it happened to him. Now, that doesn't prove anything either.
Yeah. You
know, he may have lied, and now he's, perpetuating the lie, so it doesn't look bad.
Got the big fish story.
But somebody has talon marks on their body, and they could be measured and calculated what did it. Plus his brother shot him with a BB gun and trying to cover up the scars. Who knows, It's not proof of anything. It's from my point of these kind of stories is, from the creation perspective, it's perfectly possible there could be a pterodactyl alive. From the evolution perspective, it is impossible. Okay, I'm ready to start another one. You got somebody online there, John, before I start my next one? Let him check.
We have Ben on line one.
Ben, go ahead.
I was just trying to clarify a few things that you're saying on your website. Just like one was something about the size of the sun is shrinking, and were the universe, the billions of years old, it would be too big. Is that based on an assumption that the sun has always been shrinking, or is it fluctuating, or is it demonstrated that it is always shrinking, it's not fluctuating?
Well, the sun does fluctuate. It goes through cycles of swelling and shrinking, but that's over the 300 years of observed measurements, the general trend is toward shrinking. The sun is certainly not gaining any more mass. It is shrinking as it burns up its fuel. Now, it may be like a marshmallow swelling up, as it gets hot and shrinking back down. But the more than the size problem is the mass problem. I don't know at what point it would be a problem for the evolutionist, but I know at no point is it a problem for the creationist. The 6,000-year-old sun would the shrinking rate and the mass loss rate wouldn't matter at all in 6,000 years. Eventually, at some point, over some number of billion years, it would create a problem. Because if the sun were larger...
Well, a star doesn't last, but, according to evolution, a star does not last for a billion years. 10 million is, about the lifespan, from what I understand.
That, I don't know. I'm sure they would probably give a bigger number to it. But the point is, it can't be billions. It can't be eternal, that's for sure, because it's burning out. And it is losing mass and losing and burning up its fuel. Nobody knows of any factors that would cause it to reverse. I mean, how on earth could universe? I guess instead of
I didn't hear that. I got a little buzz.
Yeah, we're losing here. What would cause the sun to not be burning and shrinking?
I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm seeing if I call it to ask if you knew that it was always shrinking, because it didn't seem like it would. From what I understand, it kept pretty much the same mass. Its entire lifespan, and then would die.
I think that would be intuitively impossible because it's burning. A burning object cannot stay the same mass.
Okay.
All right.
But it's been demonstrated that it's always shrinking.
Well, it's only been observed and measured and all that stuff for the last 300 years. And
okay.
Yes, during that time, it's always shrinking.
What type of rate are you talking about?
There was a solar observatory. That's all covered on Walt Brown's website, creationscience.com. He has an article about that, all the physics behind the shrinking sun. Go to creationscience.com. I think you can find all the technical notes on that.
Okay. Could I ask you another thing?
Sure, sure.
About the you said something about a magnetic field is shrinking. And I understand that is demonstrated and that's true, but it seems that it's based on the assumption that it's always been shrinking. But when, in fact, if you look at the geological record, at points, the polarization is pointing in a different direction. Sometimes it's even pointing south. It's flipped and it varies,
Well, that's what they tell you. However, that has never been demonstrated. There's another good article on that very question on Walt Brown's website again, creationscience.com, or on my videotape number one. We cover that.
Yeah, I've had trouble trying to get those videotapes to work.
Okay. There's no question the Earth's magnetic field appears to have been stronger and weaker in the last 300 years or whatever it is, it's been measured, real accurate ones since 1850s or so. I think since 1850, the Earth has lost 10% of its magnetic strength. Nobody knows how it could reverse. They've certainly not demonstrated that it has. They don't even have a good model. How could the magnetic field of the Earth flip over?
It is somewhat of a mystery.
Well,
but yeah. I'm just saying, you are aware that's the belief that if you go look through the geology, you know, the rocks in the ground, they are pointing different ways.
No, I disagree with that. I think.
Well,
that,
I mean, you're aware of that.
Oh, I'm aware of belief. I'm aware of what they say, but
okay.
I don't believe what they say about it. I think what they did was they did a graph showing a kind of like a sine wave of stronger and weaker and stronger and weaker magnetic intensities, and then they assumed falsely that anything below average on their sine wave was a reversal, when it's not actually a reversal, it's just simply weaker than the stronger points. If you watch video number 1B, the second hour, we cover that in pretty good detail and give lots of references for more on the magnetic field declining.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye.
Call anytime. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. Well, folks, if you want to be on the program, you can call in 850-479-3466. And it is live. Jonathan, there are 1,000 anti-Hovind websites. Why don't they call in to the program?
I don't know. I don't know why. A lot of them like to keep their websites. They like to be on forums and shoot their mouth off whenever no one can see them or actually speak to them personally. But, you know, it really does, you know.
They hide behind anonymity or whatever the word is.
Anonymous,
yeah, Italian. Okay, here we go. From Steve, K-O-E-H-N-K-E, Konkenke, Germany. He says, hi, I glanced through your book section, but I didn't see anything about fluoride and how it is bad for us. Do you have any books with a chapter on fluoride? I do. I don't have any, but I can tell you where to get one. AmericanVoice.com. There's a book. It's about $10. It's really big. It's called Fluoride, Teeth, and the Atomic Bomb, or something like that, showing how that the development of the atomic bomb caused a waste product to be produced. I think it's from Alcoa Aluminum, if I remember the details. The waste product was fluoride, which was very poisonous and hard to get rid of. And so Rockefeller decided he would sell his poison instead of have to pay to dump it. Long, sad, sad story about fluoride. You want to get, I think it's AmericanVoice.com. I feel certain it is. You may also want to go to any number of health websites to talk about fluoride. There's just been enormous research saying it is absolute serious poison to the system. Should not be put in toothpaste, should not be put in drinking water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, here's, we're getting them faster than I can answer them here. Heave's back, Heave 23 is back, says, in your debate with Wayne State University Dr. Moore said he quoted you saying the dinosaur bones were found in Antarctica that weren't fossilized. He said he did the research on this and even asked someone about this and they couldn't find anything at all. He said the statement was false. I was wondering, do you know of any links to verify the statement? If that was true, why don't you think Dr. Moore could find the information? Okay, he's back. Here's the problem. Dr. Moore was right. It is not Antarctica that I was referring to. I should have said Arctic, okay? Not Antarctic. The frozen dinosaur bones were found in Alaska. And I said in the debate, Antarctica. And I was wrong. And I don't remember if I wrote to him or called him or something or apologized, but I'm willing to. I was wrong. He was right. There are, at least at that time, were no frozen dinosaur bones found in Antarctica. However, I think there have been now since then. But at the time, I should have said the Arctic, not Antarctic. When you're in a debate and you're talking fast and things are moving quickly, you get your tongue tangled up once in a while and get your words mixed. And so that's what happened. There's a book called The Great Alaskan Dinosaur Adventure. I think I could put my hand on it here in the library. Paul, we don't sell that one, do we? No. The Great Alaskan Dinosaur Adventure, about the finding of the frozen dinosaur bones. We could offer that one and probably could get it for you if you want it. We'll call our bookstore. It's a paperback about this size, brown, if I recall. The Great Alaskan Dinosaur Adventure. Anyway, they have the whole story in there of going up in one of these rivers in No Place, Alaska, finding frozen dinosaur bones, not fossilized. They have been found in several other places. I cover that on videotape number 7, which you can download off my website, drdino.com.
They can also look in Creation Magazine, Volume 14, Number 3, from June through August 1992, pages 16 through 17. And Margaret Helder, Ph.D., actually wrote an article called Fresh Dinosaur Bones Found, and these are also in Alaska, 1961.
Right. So I think Dr. Moore was right that nobody could verify my statement, but he was straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel, okay? That's what they always do. Minor point. Sorry about that. I was wrong. He was right.
And they also said, why couldn't he find the stuff? You said once before, this is a brilliant thing, to have to memorize this. They can't find evidence against evolution. It's just much like a thief cannot find a cop. They don't want to find it.
Oh, right.
You know.
Hey, are any of the new debates, are any of our debates online? People can download them?
Yeah, your debate, pretty recent too, with Matthew Rainbow at Antelope Valley College,
that
is online.
Mm-hmm.
And also debate number 10 of the original 12 is also online.
All right.
There's now 20 of them.
We need to get Shermer up someday too, number 20. Yeah. Or get somebody with a, what's that special line that can download, they can donate space where we can put our stuff on somebody else's website. Okay, here's one from MZTRESS Gish. Mm-hmm. Mistress Gish, whatever that is. I attended the Michael Shermer debate and witnessed him get his rear end handed to him. Whatever that means. And was amazed how he could write an article on the Skeptic website shortly thereafter, claiming he had, in fact, won the debate, intellectually speaking. Did he really write that, Jonathan?
I'm about to go check right now. Let's see what he has to say.
Skeptic website. See if Michael Shermer said he won the debate. I'll tell you what. You order debate number 20 and see for yourself. It is on there, unedited, except for adding in the slides that Shermer sent me and I sent to the editing people. So if he thinks he won, I don't know if I can help him. It says, one rude man at that debate kept shouting that you were lying when you were pointing out that nuclear fusion occurred in stars. That confused me. I'm curious, how exactly have evolutionists tried to argue your point on star formation? I don't think I know what their point was. We know we see stars burn up. We've never seen one form. If they'd like to believe stars form, that's great. They can believe whatever they want. But that's not science, okay? This goes on to say, on a side note, I wanted to thank you for the impact your videos had on my conversion from being a traditional Satanist for 6 years to turning to seek the truth about the Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you so much. Keep on doing the Lord's work. Well, amen. That's wonderful. Go find somebody else to share it with. Okay, the rest of you, Benosaurus. I did see the site. That is baloney. We'll talk about that Monday when I get back. Join us again Monday, folks, for the program. See you then. Check out our new website. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.